pianist Peter Duchin. 50 years ago this week, he led the house band for what was called the Party of the Century. On November 28, 1966, a who's who of artists and high society types gathered in the Grand Ballroom of New York's Plaza Hotel for writer Truman Capote's Black and White Ball. The guest list included Frank Sinatra, Andy Warhol, first daughter Linda Bird Johnson. It was to honor publisher Katharine Graham, but in the process, our next guest says, Capote also helped create our sense of celebrity as we know it. Deborah Davis is the author of the 2006 book Party of the Century, The Fabulous Story of Truman Capote and the Black and White Ball. Deborah, set the scene for us. The Grand Ballroom, bandleader Peter Duchin.
Well, when Peter Duchin was playing that night, he had a funny way of describing it. He said he always looked at the women's shoes before he determined what kind of music to play because they told you everything. And that night, the guests heard a lot of My Fair Lady and Moon River, appropriately, from Breakfast at Tiffany's. Mostly classic show tunes because it was a very elevated crowd.
And very elegant. Just describe it. They wore black and white.
They did wear black and white. That was Truman's genius. If you really want people to focus on your party, give them an agenda. He told his guests that they had to dress in black and white and that they had to wear masks. This, of course, prompted a frenzy of preparations and made it what everybody was talking about for 7 weeks before the ball.
And the masks were made by, a young designer who called himself Halston?
First timer. Halston had just transitioned from being a hat maker, and so this was his big moment. There were designers like Halston and Adolfo, you know, who did these fabulous custom masks for these incredibly beautiful women.
And here's Truman Capote speaking to CBS News in 1966 about masks as a democratization of the party.
The reason that we made it a mask dance was simply because in a masked ball, you see, for the first hours of it, before the unmasking, anybody can dance with anybody they want to or talk to anybody they want to. It's a completely free thing. By the time the unmasking come, you made a lot of new friends, and that was the point.
Well, and remind us, Deborah, as we hear that distinctive voice of Truman Capote, you know, what this marked in time, it's almost impossible. When you see the Met Ball now in New York, you see Beyoncé next to a high society philanthropist, you know, walking up the steps together. But in the 60s, that was unheard of to mix celebrity and high society.
You're right, Robin. It was completely unheard of. Washington society stayed with Washington and politics. New York stayed by itself. And, you know, the movie business, well, they had their own kinds of parties. People from all different walks of life had never met each other before and were very pleased and surprised to be in the same room together.
And then there were further people from, Kansas, where Truman Capote had researched in cold blood.
The Kansas guests had the best time. They got there first. They left last. It was very funny, though, because, you know, most New Yorkers dismissed them as being, you know, yokels because they came from Holcomb, Kansas. And one of them had the name Odd Williams. So they thought, he's a farmer. Well, of course, he was an agriculture tycoon. The guests from Kansas really made the night for everybody.
Well, we mentioned In Cold Blood. It had just become a sensation. Capote was on the cover of Life, Newsweek. You know, so he had, first of all, he had the money to spend because he had this bestseller. He was also celebrating his success. But we mentioned the party was for Katharine Graham. Now, some people might know her as, you know, just the dynamic woman behind the Watergate expose of the Washington Post. But who was she when Capote had the party for her?
Well, in 1966, Katharine Graham owned the Washington Post, but was a recent widow. Her husband had just committed suicide, and Truman was a friend of hers and decided that she was, as he said to her, "You're sad and you need cheering up, so I'm going to have this fabulous party for you." And she said, "Well, I'm okay," but he wouldn't take no for an answer. Everybody would come out for Katharine Graham, and so she was his choice for a guest of honor.
Well, someone would say this was the peak of Capote's career. He began a slide into alcoholism and drug abuse. And what is the sense of what it meant in sort of the history of grand balls? Because it was democratizing, but some would say it was also slumming, you know, just sort of.
Well, there's no question that the party triggered an insatiable thirst in readers for the very "who wore it better" coverage that is so popular today. But the distinction is that at that moment in time, you had to earn your place on the red carpet. And celebrity had a different definition. It wasn't the 15 minutes of fame. The thing about the black and white ball was that it was a private party that we were given an insider peek at. And it did create a monster. And it also marked Capote's demise, in a sense, because before the ball, he had always said that gregariousness is the enemy of art. When he was writing a book, he would go off into seclusion and he would never be interrupted by, you know, any element of social life. After the ball, he became the world's best guest. And he just went from one event to another, and he lost his hold on his art. And that was very sad. The culture changed, and Capote changed as well.
And now you don't get invited to a party. Your publicist tries to get you invited to a party, and some celebrities are paid to go to parties. So Truman Capote is either credited or blamed for launching the present-day celebrity culture. Deborah Davis, author of the 2006 book Party of the Century, the fabulous story of Truman Capote and the Black and White Ball. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And you're listening to Here and Now